Mr. Finchley Takes the Road by Victor Canning. Adapted for radio by Andy and Eric Merriman. Episode 2, in which Mr. Finchley breakfasts with a barber, detects a detective, and is caught in his own snare.
Oh, this water's freezing. Still, it's a lovely morning, isn't it, Judge Warden? Oh, what's the matter? Don't you like my singing? Birds don't seem to mind it. They're joining in.
Excuse me. Could you just hold that pose for a moment longer?
I beg your pardon?
I'm taking a photograph. Don't move. That's it. Good.
What on earth do you think you're doing?
Well, I just said I'm taking a snapshot.
But you can't do that. I'm stripped to the buff, and I don't even know you.
Blaine's the name, Horace Blaine. I live in the house over there.
Oh, do you? Oh, I see, yes. But still, it's a bit much. I mean, what a chap's washing himself. He expects a bit of privacy.
I hope you don't mind. No offence, I just couldn't resist it. It's a hobby of mine, photography. I might send it to one of the holiday competitions in the newspapers, you know, with a snappy caption. How about morning ablutions? Or maybe caravanner cleans up.
I don't like the sound of that.
No, perhaps you're right. Mind you, it might not get into the papers at all because, well, I don't know, between you and me, I'm not all that good with the camera. Perhaps I'm choosing the wrong subjects.
Yes, well, I could have told you that.
Any suggestions?
What about my horse? Or my caravan, for that matter. They're both much more interesting than me.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Although I do have to say, it is rather a magnificent-looking caravan. Is it lovely inside? Do you know, I've never been inside one.
Well, would you like to look over it?
Oh, I'd love to. How very much. Caravan. Ship of the desert, eh? Oh, no, it's camels. No, I get mixed up sometimes.
Well, have a good look round while I slip on my shirt. By the way, I'm Edgar Finchley.
Pleased to meet you.
Mind your head.
My word. This is quite the neatest thing I've ever seen.
Yes, it is rather special, isn't it? I suppose that's why I bought it.
And this is where you cook?
Yes. Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I was just about to cook myself some breakfast. Would you care to join me?
Good, are you sure? Oh, that would be delightful. How kind, thank you. Well, this is turning out to be quite an eventful day. Now, yesterday was quite different. You see, I couldn't decide whether to go for a walk in the morning.
Mr. Finchley prepared the breakfast while Horace Blaine talked. Never had Mr. Finchley heard a man talk so much. It was as though within Horace Blaine there rested compressed, repressed, bottled down and held tight a vast store of words and thoughts, a bubbling reservoir of talk. It swept over Finchley, around him, filled the caravan and spilled into the outside world so that even Church Warden's ears stood up, tickled by the sound.
And so I had a word with this chap who was a lock keeper down the canal just near Maidstone.
Mr. Blaine.
And he was telling me about this bar.
Excuse me.
Apparently, for a small amount of money.
Mr. Blaine, one sausage or two?
Two, if you can spare them.
Here we are, then.
Oh, thank you, Finchley. My word, this is the life. I can't think why I never thought of a caravan.
Well,
all the things I have thought of, but never a caravan. I've been here for 4 years, never thought of a caravan.
Do you mean you lived in that house over there for 4 years?
4 years, yes, and before that... What do you think? What do you think, Mr. Finchley?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Hairdresser.
Hairdresser?
Yes, hairdresser. Nice little business off St. Paul's Churchyard. 10 years of it, and not a moment I didn't enjoy. Always plenty doing. Always plenty of talk.
Yes, I can quite believe that. What happened to the business then?
Oh, still there. But I'm not. It was that ticket. That damn ticket. That tiny, crinkling little ticket that did it. I sometimes wish I'd never bought the thing.
What sort of ticket?
I won a prize in the Irish sweepstake. My share was £60,000. Horrible lot of money.
Yes, horrible. Quite horrible. More coffee?
Thank you. Of course, the money changed my life.
Well, it would do.
Yeah, well, it did. My wife insisted on selling the business and retiring to a house in the country.
Ah.
At first, I was as keen as my wife. We bought the house across the way. We were both happy.
And then?
And, well, I quite like the country, but it's just too quiet. There was so much I missed. Ooh, the smell of lotion, tonics, the click of the clippers, rasp of the razors. Ooh, how it all comes back.
Mm.
Good morning, sir. Please take a seat. The usual. Nice to see your face again, sir. Been on your holidays. Lucky with the weather, weren't you? Yes, it has been a good summer. I say, Mr. Finchley, I don't suppose you'd be interested in a little trim.
I'm afraid there's not much left for you to work on.
Yes, there is, and it's the least I can do in return for this splendid breakfast. I mean, there would be no charge, of course.
Well, there really is no need.
I insist.
I don't think I've got any suitable scissors.
Don't worry, I always carry a pair with me, just in case. And a comb, naturally.
Oh, naturally.
You come and sit here.
Right.
You sit there. Now, let's put this towel round your neck. Here we are. Now, let me see. What can I do with this?
Not very much, I'm afraid. I'll leave it to you.
Oh, dear. Who normally cuts your hair?
Oh, you wouldn't know him. Just a little shop in Hampstead.
Professional, is he?
Yes. Well, there's a red and white pearl outside, if that's anything to go by. I always thought it was quite good.
Well, it could be worse. He might have a lot more hair for him to ruin.
Ha, ha.
You know, if it wasn't for the wife, I'd be back in the old business like a shot, but she won't hear of it. Says I've earned the right to enjoy myself, and when I tell her just as soon work, she says it'd be wrong to keep another man out of a job.
Well, quite.
Mind you, if it was your chap in Hampstead, it wouldn't be such a bad thing.
You really miss this, don't you?
Yes, yes. Although, I do get to cut the gardener's hair once a fortnight in the greenhouse. Wife doesn't know about that.
Well, I won't tell her.
I suppose I'll get over it. Question of adjusting myself to a new life. A period of transition, my wife calls it.
Do you know?
But I'd never thought of a caravan.
Oh.
It's an idea, isn't it? Mm. The wife wouldn't want to come, of course, but she wouldn't mind me going off. And I should meet people like you, Mr. Finchley. I suppose you wouldn't think of selling your caravan, would you?
Oh, no.
Not for £100?
Oh, no. I don't want to sell it. I've only just bought it. Will you be much longer with my hair?
No, I'm afraid that's it. Will that be all?
Oh, yes. Thank you very much.
Yes, well, it does look much better. Well, it's been very nice to meet you, Mr. Finchley.
And you, Mr. Blaine.
If you come back this way, do call in and see me.
Well, I will, but only if you don't sneak up on me with your camera.
Thanks for breakfast. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Well, churchwarden. Whoa there! Good boy. Yes, here we are. I think this must be Froghole Farm. Oh dear, look at the state of the place. Oh, never mind. Not exactly how the estate agent described it. A productive walled garden of character and oldie-worldy charm with exciting potential.
Mr. Finchley looked around in dismay. No scythe or mower had touched the fields for years, and in one or two places, young thorns were standing 3 and 4 feet high. It was a wasteland, a wild profusion of nature, thick with nettles, thistle, burdock and hogweed, and pitted with rabbit stabs and burrows.
Oh, dear.
Finchley went across to the house and knew at a glance that he had not found the place he was looking for.
I'm not sure I want to bother going into this house.
Come on now, Finchley. Where's your sense of adventure?
Can't even remember where they said the key was hidden.
You don't need a key. Look, the door is open.
So it is. How strange. Oh, well, I'll just take a quick look. That's odd. I think there's someone in there. I'm sure I can smell cooking.
Come in, shipmate. It's funny how the smell of a kipper draws people. Come on in. You've got as much right here as me. Even more, I should think. I ain't even thinking of buying the place.
Well, if you're not looking over the house, what are you doing here?
I'm cooking my kipper. A man has to eat, shipmate. Are you fond of kippers?
I'm very fond of them.
at the right time in the right place.
Ah, well, I hope that this ain't one of the times you're fond of them then, because I've only got this one and I don't mean to share it. Been on the road since 7 and I'm hungry. What do you think of the place? You're going to buy it?
No, I'm not.
Oh, I shouldn't think so. Hell of a place. Owner ought to be thankful to me for coming along and building a fire in here. Take some of the damp off the room.
Yeah.
Funny thing about kippers, you'd think that you could get tired of them if you had too many, but I lived on them and nothing else for a month once.
Oh, really? Why was that?
Making the New Zealand trip we was, and the ruddy boilers blew one night. Next thing I knew, I was lying on a bit of beach, surrounded by boxes and boxes of kippers what had drifted ashore.
Good Lord.
I was there for a month. A month of nothing but kippers and water. Kippers fried, kippers boiled, kippers baked in coconut leaves, kippers grilled, even kippers raw.
Pity you didn't have any eggs and rice. You could have made a nice kedgeree.
And you know, when I got taken off by a small trading schooner, the cook dished me up with kippers for my first meal.
How inconsiderate. Still, I don't suppose he was to know of your predicament.
Of course I ate them. Never trouble me, except that from that day I've had the most tremendous thirst. Never got rid of it since. Pass that bottle of beer, would you?
There you are.
Ah, thanks. Oh, that's better. It's the salt, you see. It's got to be diluted by a large draught of strong brew.
Yes, well, I remember that. So, I leave you to your meal, Mr...
Trilby. Mark. Bob Trilby. Sorry I couldn't ask you to join me, well, but you see how it is.
Oh, don't mention it. And, I must be getting along.
Right.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, shipmate.
That afternoon, Mr. Finchley passed through Sevenoaks and turned eastwards. He saw two more houses in the district, neither of which were suitable. He jogged along, happy with his pipe and the smell of harness and horse in his nostrils, until 6 o'clock, when the sky darkened dramatically. Finchley decided to pull into a slipway at the side of the road. Inside the caravan, he lit the swinging oil lamp, and by 8 o'clock the storm had broken. Bursts of frenzied rain swirled down upon the caravan, and as water cascaded down from the roof, Mr. Finchley settled back to read a book on the joys of caravanning.
Who on earth can be out on a night like this?
Evening, shipmate. Would you give me some shelter till this rain has passed?
Well, yes, of course. Come in, come in.
Oh, it's wet enough for a mermaid's picnic. struck me, it's you.
Yes, it is me. What are you doing here, Trilby?
Well, I walked here, but I seem to have got lost or something. Then this rain came on before I could find shelter. Saw your riding light and over I came. Any port in a storm. Though I must say, you've got a snug little berth here.
Take your jacket off, it's wet.
Oh, thank you. Well, fancy it being you, eh? Funny how you run into some people all the time. Reminds me of an old sailor I knew once. Pineapple, he was called, on account of his hair growing upwards and his face being shaped that way, see? I was always meeting him. Last I ever saw of him was in Barcelona during the Spanish War. We'd run a cargo there. Franco's boys came over one evening. Boom! 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 Bombs all over the harbour. One hit the freighter alongside. An old pineapple landed at my feet. His top knot was unruffled. But he'd forgotten to bring his body with him.
Good gracious. Well, I hope our acquaintance doesn't end so tragically. Have you always been a nautical man?
When I was a boy, I ran away to sea. I'm a rolling stone. Never content, never settled down, always on the move. When I leave you tonight, who knows where I'll end up.
But you can't go out in this rain.
Why not? This ain't rain. This is gentle dew compared with real rain. Anyway, I've got to find somewhere to sleep.
There's a spare bunk here, if you'd like to take it.
Oh, thank you, shipmate. Thank you. That's an offer I'll gladly accept. And what's more, I'll tell you some bedtime stories that'll make your blood curdle.
Oh, good.
And do you know She had a tail on her the size of the... Are you still awake, Finchley?
Yes, just about.
I'm just getting rather late and I'm a bit confused. Are you still gun running in the Atlantic?
Oh, no, you must have drifted off. That was a while ago. Since then, I've been fighting the Chinese hordes in Malay, been around the Cape 5 times, and now I'm shipwrecked on a desert island with just a mermaid for company.
Oh, dear, I seem to have missed quite a lot.
You did hear about when I was kidnapped by cutthroat pirates and made to walk the plank over a shark-infested sea?
No, I don't think so.
I
think I'd have remembered that.
Oh, well, there I was, see, cruising on a guano boat in the Caribbean
Do you think there's any chance of shivering my timbers in the morning? I'm getting rather tired, and after all, it would be something to look forward to.
Oh, but I shan't be here in the morning.
Won't you?
No. My ship sails tomorrow from Gravesend. I'm bound for the Black Sea. Oh, it'll be good to feel the salty tang of the sea on my face and the wind whistling through the mizzen as the ship cuts through the restless storm swept, pounding waves.
Oh, dear, here we go again.
You know, it reminds me of the time I was on a ship going...
When Mr. Finchley awoke the next morning, Trilby had already abandoned ship. And Finchley, after a leisurely breakfast, set off in the direction of Maidstone. Chiff-chaffs called incessantly to him from the heart of the woods, and always, just ahead but never seen, a cuckoo called and called until the whole countryside rang. The cuckoo, however, was not the only companion he had. For some time now, Finchley had been followed by a man on a bicycle. A bicycle which betrayed its presence by a loose spoke that clicked as it turned.
Yes, I've noticed that as well.
And what else have you noticed?
Those ridiculous disguises. First of all, he passed me wearing a trilby and a pair of pince-nez. And then, a few hours later, he returned wearing a cap and horn-rimmed spectacles. Who is he?
I don't know. Why don't you ask him?
All right, I will.
He's over there, trying to hide in a gorse bush. Pathetic, isn't it?
Ah, yes. I can see him.
Hello. Good evening. Were you looking for me?
Oh, there you are. Good evening, Mr. Finchley.
How on earth do you know my name, and what are you doing spying on me?
Anselm is the name, Mr. Finchley. Oliver Watt Anselm. Watt was my father. He was fond of tea and an amateur inventor. Shall we go out by the caravan? These gorse bushes become too intimate after a while. Here, my card.
Oliver Watt Anselm. Private inquiries, strictest secrecy, Frigg Mansions, Holborn, EC1.
Correct.
How the devil do you know my name?
Easy. Edgar Finchley, Nessington Avenue, Hampstead, London. It's inside most of your books.
Books? What books?
Well, the books in your caravan, of course.
Do you mean to say you've been inside my caravan?
Well, naturally, yesterday afternoon when you stopped for lunch at that pub. But it wasn't from the books that I learned your name and address.
Well, sir, I should be very glad if you would kindly explain yourself quickly. Entering my caravan, shadowing me for the last few days, I've never heard of such impudence. You're a puppet in this
house. Please, Mr. Finchley, don't take it like that. I'll explain, but let us talk in an atmosphere of reason and frankness. After all, I've got my living to make. You wouldn't deny me the right to make my living, would you, Mr. Finchley?
That depends.
Well, I'm a private investigator. One of the best investigators in London. I am, I say it with modest but firm conviction, competent, courteous, and discreet.
Oh, come now. A child could have seen through your disguises. Besides, you know, you don't look a bit like a private detective. Sherlock Holmes, Father Brown and Sexton Blake, they were all distinctive.
Exhibitionists, the whole bunch. No investigator can afford to be an exhibitionist.
Or have a bicycle that clicks.
Ah, so it was the bicycle that gave me away. Don't know much about bicycles. I thought they all clicked.
Sherlock Holmes would have known that. Now, will you please tell me what all this nonsense is about?
My client instructed me to find out all I could about you and what you were doing with this caravan. My client...
Who is this client of yours?
I don't know his name, and even if I did know, you'd appreciate that the ethics of my profession would not allow me to divulge it. I was hoping that when I began to investigate you, that it would become obvious. It often does, but it didn't this time. all my information leads me to believe that you are a perfectly respectable citizen.
Well, of course.
Who is taking a caravanning holiday and also looking at country properties as he goes.
Yeah, well, he is. I am. I'm dashed if I can understand why anyone should be taking an interest in me. Man must be mad.
Yeah, I thought of that too. It wouldn't be the first time I've been employed by a crank. He didn't look mad.
Oh, good.
Dangerous, yes.
Oh, dear.
Possibly violent.
Oh, dear. Dear. What do you think he might do?
I don't know.
But I need to know. Don't you have any ideas?
Well, he might decide to follow you himself.
Well, in that case, would you do me a favour?
What's that?
Could you please lend him your bicycle?
Mr. Finchley came to Maidstone late in the morning, and with church warden safely tethered at the back of an inn, he went shopping. He replenished his stores and then treated himself to a small joint of mutton. He stopped at a bookshop, called in at the post office to collect his letters, one from Mrs. Finchley and one from his son Robert. I'm afraid I can't tell you about the contents of these, as I never read anyone's personal correspondence. Mr. Finchley also decided that he needed a new shirt, and so duly entered the premises of Cawthrop and Denny, gentlemen's outfitters and drapers.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now then, how can I help you, sir?
Well, I would just...
I don't believe it.
Well, 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 it's Mr. Finchley, isn't it?
It is. And it's Bob Trilby, isn't it? Or isn't it?
It isn't. It's Cawthrop, Henry Cawthrop.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
I'm no longer Trilby.
Ah, do you mean you're wearing a different hat?
Exactly. The holiday is over.
What happened? Did you miss your ship?
There is no ship.
Oh.
In fact, there is no Trilby.
Oh.
Both are figments of my imagination, which tends to run riot during my annual fortnight's holiday.
What do you mean all that? Heave home a heart is in a vast your landlubbers all play-acting.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
So all these stories were made up?
I'm rather good at it, aren't I?
Well, you certainly fooled me. Spend your entire holiday deceiving people?
Nobody knows. Everyone thinks I go to Felixstowe.
Ah, but you don't. Instead, you take on this nautical personality and regale innocent caravanners with far-fetched yarns of seafaring adventures.
Mm.
Why do you do that?
Have you ever been to Felixstowe, Mr. Finchley? Surely every man is entitled to his dreams, especially when those dreams have been dashed. You see, many years ago, I had the chance to go to sea like Bob Trilby, and I failed to take it. Since then, during my summer vacation, I have to recreate what might have been.
But you don't go to sea?
But I do, in my mind.
And so you become Bob Trilby?
Yes.
Oh.
In this stifling atmosphere of haberdashery, he gives me a world of fantasy and romance.
I see. I think I'm beginning to understand. Well, I suppose every man is entitled to play the if-only game. Although, I must confess, I've always been content to be Edgar Finchley. There's never been a Bob Trilby in my life.
And now that you've found me out, there won't be one in my life either. It's all over.
Oh, I'm rather sorry. I should be the one to discover your secret.
Oh, some things are meant to be. It must have been fate that brought you in here.
Ah, well, actually, it was that shirt in the window.
Oh, of course. I'm sorry I was forgetting that I'm supposed to be serving you. Let me just fetch the shirt for you. It is the last one and might have faded a bit. Perhaps I could make a reduction in the circumstances.
Oh, thank you.
Now, will there be anything else?
Yes, Mr. Cawthrop. Perhaps you'd like to join me for lunch.
Oh.
Who knows? We could even share a kippah.
After lunch, Mr. Finchley was on his way back to the caravan when something hanging outside a saddler's caught his eye. A neat arrangement of wire loops and lengths of brown cord ending in tiny wooden pegs. They were rabbit snares.
Now that's an idea. Rabbit stew. Easier than roasting mutton. After all, rabbits are pests, and it would be like living off the countryside.
Mr. Finchley bought 6 snares for a shilling and stuffed them into his pocket. On the way to Faversham, he camped in a small hollow on the Pilgrim's Way and ate his evening meal. He then lit his pipe and smoked peacefully, gazing at the Kentish downlands.
He was disturbed from his reverie by a quick thudding sound from the nearby hedge. A rabbit, trapped in a snare, was twisting and jerking. He ran towards it and bent down to free the tight wire from its neck. But the rabbit was dead. As he stood there holding the warm body in his hand, Mr. Finchley knew that he would never himself have the heart to use any of the snares that he carried in his pocket.
Poor little thing.
Hey, you got him!
Got him in the act!
Oh, what's his click told me immediately?
Ooh, show him fight and he guards.
Dangerous customer, Ernie. Better hold him tight.
What's all this about? I didn't know it was your rabbit.
That's a good one.
He didn't know it was our rabbit.
Look, will you please explain?
What's this sticking out of his pocket then? Looks like a rabbit snare to me.
And he didn't know it was our rabbit.
Oh.
But you come well prepared, didn't you? Oh, the Colonel will have something to say to you. Come on.
What Colonel?
You'll soon see.
Come on.
In episode 2 of Mr. Finchley Takes the Road by Victor Canning, the part of Mr. Finchley was played by Richard Griffiths. John Bird was Horace Blaine, Chris Emmett, Bob Trilby and Garge, and John Glover was Oliver Watts Anselm and Ernie. The narrator was James Villars. Mr. Finchley Takes the Road was adapted for radio by Andy and Eric Merriman. The producer was Gareth Edwards.